Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 33 of HER, the podcast all about women, where we share the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life. I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and I'm so happy to have our wonderful expert, Dr. Jed Diamond, on with us to talk about all things relationship. But in this case, oh boy, are women really genetically programmed to have affairs? Uh-oh, before we dive into that, I want to make sure you know that this episode of HER is made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Complete Vitamins. They're delicious once-a-day gummies that contain the complete vitamin, mineral, folate, and omega mix customized just for women. Trust me, you won't forget to take them because they taste so great. To learn more, please head on over to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And just a quick reminder, too, to hop on over to iTunes after our episode to rate this podcast and review us. We really welcome your thoughts, and believe it or not, I read every single one of them. All right, it's time for HER.
HER, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind.
Her body.
Her life. It's all about HER.
Oh my goodness gracious, are women genetically programmed to have affairs? We have with us our go-to relationship expert, Dr. Jed Diamond. He's the founder and director of the Men Alive, a health program that helps men and the women who love them. He's one of the world's leading experts on midlife marriage with more than 40 years of counseling experience. He's the author of 14 books, including international bestsellers, Male Menopause and The Irritable Male Syndrome. I'm glad to know we're spreading it over to men too. Just saying, Jed, just saying. His latest book is The Enlightened Marriage, The Five Transformative Stages of Relationships and Why the Best is Still to Come. Oh, I just love this book. Love, love, love it. Okay, Jed, welcome back to the HER podcast.
Oh, it's great to be with you again. It was fun last time. I'm looking forward to it again.
All right. Now, are women predisposed by their genetics to have affairs as backup plans if their relationships fail, according to new research from the University of Texas? And they say that this is challenging the assumption that humans have evolved to have monogamous relationships. And the entire team over there at the University of Texas put forward the mate switching hypothesis, which says humans have evolved to keep testing their relationships and looking for better long-term options. Ouch! What's that about, Jed? I mean, I sent you this research, and I wanted to—I was waiting for your little jaw to hit the floor and say, "Say what?" So, what do you think, Jed?
Well, I think there's a couple of things that we can say. As you know, I have been working in the area of gender medicine and relationship health for more than 40 years, and what we see so often, and this is a good example of it, is there are research studies that are done. And they provide, if they're well-done studies, good information. I think the studies that this researcher did was a good study. But then you go from the study to how it gets reported, and specifically the headlines. And then what we begin to see is the headlines really are meant to get people interested or angry or in some ways to stimulate their emotions, because, you know, they're trying to sell something to people. So, you know, women are genetically programmed to have affairs, I'm sure gets people excited one way or the other. Some people go, yeah, I knew it, that's right. Well, here's the deal. Here's the truth of the matter.
Yeah. You know, all right, tell us the truth.
Okay, so women are human beings. Women are, you know, part of the human species. And we're all humans, very, very sexy creatures. We're probably the sexiest creatures on the face of the planet, and every creature on the face of the planet is sexy, or we'd none of us be here. So what are women pre-programmed for, or genetically programmed for? Well, three things, basically, in this area of sexuality. We're programmed to seek and find a mate, some special person that we can then reproduce and have children with, and then we're programmed to stay with those children and have a supportive relationship with the parent of the child long enough for that child to survive and grow and then to make it in the world. So that's the basic programming. So do humans have affairs? Of course they do. You know, we know that. But can we say that we're programmed to have affairs as opposed to we're programmed to, you know, mate for life? Well, clearly we have some people that mate for life, that never have affairs, and we have some people that have affairs. So the more interesting question is, how do we have the kind of relationships that serve us beyond what we're programmed for as a species, which is to reproduce and to be with the child long enough for them to grow so they can reproduce? That's just kind of basic biology, but it's really not the most interesting thing about humans. And I think there's a lot more interesting things we can talk about than the basic biology. Let's build on that and see how we can really have the kind of relationships that most people want to have.
I love it. I love it. Now, it's interesting. You know, you mentioned, you know, basically evolution. It's noted that for our distant ancestors, when disease, poor diet, minimal health care meant that few people lived past 30, looking for a more suitable partner was often necessary, you know. And so you're looking at an evolutionarily changing target over time. You know, we're very different than we were before. We're not right. Nomads. We're not wandering around, generally speaking. And we're living much, much longer. And I think that kind of posed a lot of big questions, which is, since we are living so much longer, knock on wood, and I hope we're enjoying it, so I'm looking at health span, not lifespan,
right.
You know, is it really realistic to think that one person could really be there with you for all those changes you're going to go through, which one would predict, obviously, as you evolve and mature throughout years and years of your life? What do you think about that?
Well, you've made a couple of points that I think are really worth noting. First, you note in the research that they did, they looked at certain conditions that make humans or any animal more likely to want to stray from the relationship and reproduce or find another partner. And as you point out, when you have conditions where you're going to die early and that you're surrounded by conditions that make lifespan much more limited, the thought of being with, you know, with the wrong partner, and for whatever reason, because you're not having children with that partner, or they're angry and mean and they're beating you up all the time, you know, you want to, you know, get out if that's the case. On the other hand, if we're living in situations where there's enough food and there's enough safety and there's enough support, so then we're going to want to stay, you know, in a relationship because it's meeting our needs. Then you go on, you make another wonderful point, which is, you know, our evolutionary history, for most of human history, we did not live to the great length of time that we're living now. You know, as late as, you know, the 1900s, the average lifespan was 45 years. And so, you know, you would meet somebody, you'd mate, you'd have a child, you'd raise the child, you know, till they could make it on their own. And then it was time for retirement, and you'd have a couple of years post-reproductive years, and then you'd die. You know, and that was the lifespan. But now, as you point out, we're living, you know, into our 70s, 80s, 90s, 100s. And so how do we then have a relationship that is, we know, is going to change? You know, and one of the things I point out in my book, I say people need to renew their marriages every 15 years. You know, it acknowledges that we're different people, you know, at least every, you know, 10, 15 years, and we have to really relook. What is it we want in a relationship? How do we keep the relationship vital and alive, you know, as we go through these changes? And the good news
is I'm going to interrupt you there because I think that that is a brilliant idea. And I don't think anybody talks about that. I think that they just think you tootle along and somehow basically you muddle through. But to really, what you're saying is stop. Okay, stop for a moment and acknowledge that each person has gone through changes. And then, you know, renew, regroup, and literally say, okay, those first 10 years, right, we went through X, Y, and Z. Let's go back and revisit it for a second. Wow, a lot of changes here. Career things went on, maybe children, maybe whatever went on. Maybe medical conditions, maybe some crises that you lived through, whatever. Now it's time to regroup again and then to go further. I think a lot of people live in the past, and I think that they expect that at year 15, things should be as absolutely identically fresh and vibrant as they were the moment you met. I don't know. I have funky feelings about that. Am I wrong?
No, absolutely right. You know, there's the joke about the couple have been married for, you know, 60, 70 years, and the woman turns to the man. She says, you know, why do you tell me you love me anymore? You know, and his answer is, well, I told you I loved you when we first got married, and, you know, if I change my mind, I'll let you know. You know, the idea somehow is you say that we fall in love and we just kind of roll along through the years and we don't have to do anything to renew or keep the love alive. And one reason to keep it alive is that love is a verb. It's an active engagement. It isn't something that you fall into and then you're there. To me, it's a dialogue, it's an exchange, it's a continuing process of interaction. And secondly, we change, you know, over time. We're different people than we were, as you point out, when we're first together, when we're then in reproductive years, if we're having children, you know, if we're children are starting to grow up and then they grow up and they leave. We have to then reprogram what we want in the relationship. We have to look honestly at our partner and say, these are the qualities that I really appreciated at this stage, but now I need something differently. And can we then talk about what we really want, what we need? And instead of, you know, what I tell, you know, myself, as you know, I've been married now for 37 years, and my wife and I have been remarried to each other every 15 years, so we've been remarried three times. And each time what we've discovered is that we need to get to know each other. We're new people, you know. And the good news is, isn't it cool to have a new marriage partner with the same person, to have the benefits of a long marriage that continues to last, but one that can be renewed, and to be with somebody that's new and different after, you know, 10 or 15 years. I really like that model.
Well, I think that is a brilliant idea, you know, as that's why your book, The Enlightened Marriage, The Five Transformative Stages of Relationships and Why the Best is Still to Come, is probably, you know, literally seminal. It is a text I would absolutely encourage everyone out there to go out there and grab, because it has these really cool, novel ways to be able to keep it going regardless. And I love that. Now, I'm going to throw a challenge your way. So I know a couple, right, that I've worked with. And in the couple, they had, you know, they themselves have a lot of trauma in their backgrounds, and they had rough childhoods. And then as they grew up, they never really got therapy for any of that. But once they got into a relationship, they got married. After about the first 3 years, things started getting, you know, funky because of trauma behavior. And they did some acting out. And now they're at about year 13. And I, between you and me, now I'm going to make sure that they do a renewal. But what's tough is when you've had tough times, and there's been no, you know, infidelity or anything in this case, but there was a lot of acting out and omissions and a little bit of lying going on and funky behavior. Sometimes it's hard for people to forgive each other, do you know?
Right.
And so what are your tips, tools, techniques to get beyond the painful speed bumps that happened along the way in those first 10 years, say, for instance?
Well, there's a couple of things. First of all, what I've found is that most all of us have had some level of trauma in our growing up. You know, very few of us came from families that were totally loving, where we were totally understood, heard, seen, accepted, and our parents were not in stressful situations where they might have had loving intent, but, you know, they had a bad day, a bad week, a bad month, a bad year, and we as children, you know, bore the brunt of that. So the result is that all of us then enter relationships often with these hidden wounds. These parts of us that are still raw nerves that react to loss or potential loss or to, you know, an angry word that may trigger feelings and fears from our past. So what happens then is that when we're together for, you know, a length of time, these old wounds start to surface. We often don't recognize them as coming from the past. We just think, geez, my partner, you know, is not like they used to be. They used to be so loving, and now they're getting, as you say, funky or getting angry around the edges or becoming withdrawn. So what I've learned is that this is actually a stage of a good relationship. I call it stage three, disillusionment. We become disillusioned with our partner in some way. And what that often means is it's an invitation to really begin to look at the past wounds that we experience, because the past wounds are telling us where the work needs to be done. We were wounded in relationships, and the healing needs to happen in relationships. If we recognize that, then instead of blaming each other or thinking we're with the wrong person, we need to move on, we can begin to now be partners in healing. We can become our own healers, our own therapists, our own guidance counselors, our own, you know, love counselors to help us find the ways to heal. Sometimes you need an actual counselor, obviously, to help guide you through these things. But the mindset that we can begin to enter into is one in which these wounds are opportunities for healing, not only our present relationship, but the past relationships that we've kind of buried those wounds, and they're down there percolating, but we've covered them over. Now's the chance not only to heal the past, but to heal the present, and then to move in to a glorious, what I call stage four and stage five love relationships that can be the best love we've ever known.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I love listening to you because you're always so hopeful, and you're filled with, you know, these tools to be able to, you know, turn feelings of helplessness, hopelessness, and defeat into something that is truly viable, which really helps. Because, you know, I mean, tell me if I'm wrong, right? I mean, you've been doing this for over 40 years. How many people out there have had the rocky childhoods, adolescence, for a lot of reasons, everything from the big league, you know, child abuse and neglect and abandonment to, you know, just funkiness that made it really hard for whatever reason. There might have been some bullying going on. There might have been some bad feelings about body image, you know, whatever the issue is. But people have harbored that for years. Then they get married. You know, and during that honeymoon period in the beginning, when you're all on good behavior, nobody knows anything. But oh boy, those behaviors and feelings and emotions that you've harbored for years start really poking up their little heads because they have to. You're living with another human being. I think a lot of people should have probably gotten help a heck of a long time, you know, long ago before they even got into a relationship, but most have never done that. So I bet when you're working with you know, people together, a lot of that surfaces. Would you say that that's been a common phenomenon?
Oh, it's totally common. I mean, two parts of that are part of the human experience. First of all, generally, we don't look for help on anything, you know, until we run into some kind of a crisis.
Ain't that the truth?
You know, we just, whatever
it
is, whether it's, you know, dealing with our eating habits or dealing with our job situation or our love life. I mean, when there's a crisis, then we go, oh, got our attention. Now I better do something. So the fact that this hits at a certain point in our relationship, you know, is the absolute right time if we understand what the message is. You know, what we've been taught is when you fall in love, you know, the fairy tales tell us, and then they lived happily ever after. And so we think, and, you know, if you look at all the dating sites, there's all this emphasis on finding that special someone, finding your perfect partner, and then the supposed belief is that, and then you live happily ever after once you find that right person. And if you're not living happily ever after, the assumption is, well, then I must be with the wrong person. I try to fix it, and it stays funky, it stays off track. Well, we're often with exactly the right person to heal the exact kind of wounds that we had in our own backgrounds. We find the perfect partner, but we don't recognize them as the perfect partner. That's why so many people come and they really like working with me for two reasons. One, I help them work through these things and realize that they have the perfect partner. And secondly, this fear that if I do this work about my past, this is going to be terribly long range. I'm going to be doing it for years and years and years. It's going to cost a lot of money, and it's going to be very painful. And the good news is it can be fun, and you can get through these things once you have a new love map and some guidance very, very quickly. So the kind of things that we know how to do now with relationship counseling is really taking us into a whole new world of joy and love that nobody ever knew about before.
Well, I love this. And I really think that another huge point that you make is the crazy expectations people have. But I think so much of that is fostered by, you know, this rush of dopamine, and they have to, you know, they're living in a dopamine haze, and that's obviously the pleasure, you know, brain chemical, and they're not thinking straight, to say the least. And I think that, you know, just looking at the issue of real expectations, knowing that this is work, you know, I mean, let's think about this. If you just have a friend, you know, like I have a bunch of BFFs, and I'm sure you do too. It's work to nurture and to maintain those relationships. It's loving work, you know.
Right.
If someone's birthday is coming up and I'm going to give them a special, you know, gift, the loving work is I'm going to go out and either make it or buy it or all of the above and really go out of my way to make it something special. It's work, it's time, it's effort, but it's done with love in my heart, right? So why wouldn't we expect that of a relationship that is a partner? And I think a lot of people just think that there's magic involved here. I don't know. There's some funky magic going on where you just sort of get together and magically it all just sort of comes together, you know, and this is work. I'm sorry if nobody wants to hear that word, but you got to work it. Isn't that true, Jack?
Right. Well, it's like anything that's worth having, you have to work. And I think, again, what I try to help people see, and it's exactly what you're saying, is that this notion of this fairy tale relationship where you fall in love and live happily ever after, and it's just, you know, downhill from there, and you don't have to do anything, you know, is not the way it is. That's a sure, you know, recipe for, you know, a hot first couple of years or first couple of months, and then a very difficult crash. On the other hand, if we recognize that relationships are more like the hero's journey, you know, the really going on a quest for something that's so beautiful and valuable. But what happens in the hero's journey is, you know, you have difficulties. you run up against your own fears and demons. You know, there's dragons out there. They're the dragons of our inner lives and our inner work. If we recognize and we saw marriage and relationship as a vision quest, we would expect, not everything to be sweetness and light, but things to be deeply, satisfying as we learn about, the intricacies of love and all the different facets of how do you love well. If we saw that as, we go on career quests to learn how to be really good at whatever our career goals are, but a love goal, a relationship goal, we kind of just take that for granted. So, once people know that and they then get some guidance and some teaching so that they can go, okay, well, if I wanted to become a doctor or a brain surgeon, I'd go to somebody and really learn how to do that well. And if you really want to be a good practitioner of the arts of love and relationship, you want to go and learn how to do that well. And once you find out how fun it could be and, it is work, but it's joyous work. It's the best work in the world that there is. What better work could there be to learn how to really do relationship well and really nurture a loving partnership, but not only find that right someone, but to be able to look forward to being with them through, your 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, into your 80s, 90s, and hopefully all the way through the life cycle.
I love it. I just absolutely love it. Well, we've been talking to Dr. Jed Diamond, who is our go-to relationship expert. His book is The Enlightened Marriage, The 5 Transformative Stages of Relationships and Why the Best is Still to Come. It is a fabulous read, and I'm not just saying it, Jed. I am saying that this is a wonderful guidebook, a way to be able to reframe what a relationship is all about and how to be able to improve the one you have already, or maybe are contemplating for that matter, to really readjust expectations and all the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
So this has been nothing but fantastic. Please learn more about Jed's wonderful work by going to his website at Men Alive. That's MENALIVE, menalive.com. Jed, thank you once again for being on the Her Podcast. Yay! Go Jed, I say.
Yeah,
and
my
by
pleasure,
the way,
as always. You have a great
all
audience
you women out
and
there,
love to talk to you.
Well, all you women out there who think you are genetically programmed to have affairs, honey, your time, you came and went. That was about a million years ago in Paleolithic era, but we'll just let that go. You're going to have to listen to the whole podcast to understand, how we reframe that study and the science that goes behind it. All right. Thanks, Jed. All right. Remember to catch every episode of Her. Just hit subscribe on iTunes or on our show page at RadioMD.com. And please take 30 seconds or less and rate this podcast on iTunes. Why? Because we want more people like you to listen to the show and enjoy it and check it out, but it only happens when you take the time to rate it. While you're at it, can you leave a review as well? Because guess what? In my spare time, I read every flipping one of these things, so please do it. I'm Dr. Pam Peake. Follow me on Twitter at PamPeakeMD, and you can also check out our Her Show page at RadioMD.com for all of the past episodes as well. Thanks for listening, and stay well.